So, to get this started, set everybody's expectations. I'm going to sort of dig into the tools and what's available to you as a link admin who needs to look at network issues, and a little bit about what's available to you as a network admin who might need to look at link issues when somebody reports call quality problems. So, what I really want to do here is give everybody an explanation of what tools are available to help you as an administrator troubleshoot those call quality issues due to network problems. I want to do a little bit to show you how to use those tools as well. And then really, partially, it's to arm you guys with the ability to know what tool is the right tool for troubleshooting what type of problem on your network or what type of problem in your environment. So, and all in all, have some fun. I try to make this a little interactive. By all means, if you have questions or things to bring up, please do. With that said, here's your scenario. Somebody reports to you, either through CQM or simply through your service desk, you've got a hot spot of trouble somewhere in your environment. Where do you go from there? This is a little sort of flow chart that, not really flow chart, a little diagram that somebody else made up that tries to correlate the ways and different types of issues that we have on the network to the potential root causes they are. It gives you a little bit of an ability to say, when I have call reliability problems, I should tackle them with these type of things, and when I have call quality issues, first it's about quantifying what call quality issue means. Call quality could be anything from broken up audio to echo to jitter to just noise. Right? Noise can be caused because somebody was in a Starbucks on their phone. Is that a call quality issue? Yes, but is it a call quality issue that I can solve by some technological means? No. So, with that said, this is a little sort of interface that's really helpful to some people when they have to go root cause, where do I start? Because all I know is I've got audio quality issues somewhere. Then I have this little matrix here, which tries to sort of categorize when I'm troubleshooting a quality problem on a server, and I want to look at the server, what tools do I use? Or when I'm trying to troubleshoot a quality problem on an endpoint, what types of tools do I use? Rather than when I'm trying to troubleshoot that same quality problem, and I really have now isolated it down to the network, what tools do I have or what tools can help me in that process? So we cover everything from pre-call diagnostics tools to QoE reports, and I lump QoE and CQM really together because they work really well together. I cover CQM very briefly in this session. If you did not go to Andrew and Jens' session or the repeat of it, go and pull it up and review it. It's really worthwhile. Okay. So we just said you got calls and you got a rash of problems in one location. What could you have done to prevent that? Right? Let's start there. We've got this nifty little tool called the pre-call diagnostics tool. We've got a Windows 8 store version, and there's a Windows desktop version of this. This will give you the ability to work with your end users and have your service desk work with your end users to understand what characteristics on their network may indicate that they could have a successful quality call before they have these problems. So it's partially about, are your service desk engineers simply looking at the UCC API logs and QoE reports to say what's the cause of that poor quality call? Or could they also arm themselves with the data out of these pre-call diagnostics tools to get that look at, hey, if I were to place the call here, would it look good or look bad? Would it have a good NMOS score? Would it have good jitter? What's my packet loss looking like on this network before I place a call? The other piece of this is arming your users and educating your users, independent of placing a call into the service desk, to understand when they're roaming around in your network or roaming around the world, on these hotspots, on these Wi-Fi networks, in Starbucks. Giving them a tool that lets them decide should they be placing a link call over that network and expect the quality to be good, or should they decide there's another way they need to make that call? Right? It helps your users, it helps you. You don't get reports of poor quality audio, they don't experience the poor quality audio. The latest update to this tool lets it work on domain joined and non-domain joined workstations. It's a very quality tool, and they've got they're working on it. So if you've got feedback for them, there's feedback links on the download links for it, and the team would definitely take your feedback as you see the need for this. Okay. So with that being said, it did happen. We didn't have those tools or those processes in place, so now we've got this big set of call quality issues coming in from a specific location. Well, how do we figure out what we next need to troubleshoot? How do we isolate that down to the thing that's causing the quality problems? First place you start there is really QoE, CDR, and CQM. First place here, if we look at this report snapshot, so this is a report from a call that I actually made, and on the inbound stream there, it's a little bit of packet loss. Anybody think that call sounded good? Nope. I was wired into Hardwire on CorpNet. Dead serious. Don't know. Actually, I think I know exactly what it was, but it wasn't any of that. I had too many salespeople in the office downloading ISOs. That's what it was. Yes? So the max is just a spike. So it was over a 1 second period. That's what it spiked to over that 1 second. And then, but over the duration of the call, it averaged out to the 50. And in QoE, we don't, for a poor quality call, we only look at packet loss, jitter, round trip, concealed samples, right? Right. We don't look at that max, whereas in CQM, they look at the max as well. Okay, so this is that snapshot of what data is in QoE. Well, now we have to look at sort of where that comes from and what it means. If people went to Scott Stubberfield and Nick Smith's session earlier, they covered the same metrics, they covered these same things about, this is how QoE classifies a call as poor. When you start looking at the poor calls in your environment, the reds will be things that have these metrics bad. If these don't match characteristics that you think your users or your network can achieve, QoE isn't going to change. You have to alter what you're looking at. You can't rely on its color coding and highlighting to do that work for you like it would. As in, the big one that I see a lot of customers dealing with is this 500 millisecond round trip time. If you've got people making calls, PC to PC calls from India to the US, speed of light, it may get higher than that. And that may not be causing call quality issue for your users. They may be expecting that, understanding that that's an okay thing for them. Okay? With that said, CQM. Who didn't go to one of the CQM sessions here? Okay, so a few of us. Okay, so if you haven't, as I say, go review those CQM sessions that Andrew and Jens do. I have 3 slides on it. They have 75 minutes on it. CQM, in the short, really looks at quality in 3 ways across 3 sort of sizes. It looks at it across the servers, and the base point there is your servers have to be healthy to ensure an ability to have the other things contribute to quality call. If your servers aren't healthy, if you're missing these KHIs, if you aren't meeting those criteria, how could you expect the calls to succeed and go well? Next, we look at the network. CQM breaks the network down into the different locations that these streams exist between. It breaks it down into the different paths across the network. It tries to break it down into a bunch of different characteristics. But the core of this and core of CQM is this edict that the managed network must be healthy, right? Your internal CorpNet managed network, really should you be experiencing more than a percent packet loss on that network? One would hope not. Last, but certainly not least, is endpoint. With endpoint, we're talking about everything from the PC that is running Link or the phone that is running Link to the headset that the person's using or the render and capture device that the person's using. It's entirely possible that when you got that call, that report of a bunch of poor quality calls at a site, brand new site, it's because they put out a headset that you hadn't tested and the headset has problems. Right? That would give you poor quality calls, but it's not something you can fix by fixing the network. So that's why CQM has you look at those endpoints as well. It has you look at the devices in use in your environment. CQM, though, really looks at those different three things, server plant, endpoints, and last mile, across these nine areas. There's a set of SQL queries that come out of CQM that can pull the data out of your QoE and CDR reports and try and give you information, and then there's a whole other set of reports that give you trend lines across these things. So if you start seeing an uptick in TCP over UDP media, you want to investigate why that's happening. If you start seeing an uptick in poor quality calls because of new sets of packet loss in your network, those are things you want to start digging into. And that's why the CQM methodology really talks about this about asserting. That is, we have to define what good means to us in our company. We can't rely on the built-in metrics, because if you have a high-quality managed network and for you, 0.5% packet loss is too much, CQM needs to be altered. If you would rather measure quality for your users beyond just packet loss, but also on round trip time, because you know they're all very well located and very, you know, very near to each other, you need to add those into your metrics. But you have to define as well what is good for you, as in, do you need to get to sub 1% poor quality based on the metrics you're measuring? That's why you have to assert what your thresholds are, measure to those values, and then achieve those values. You achieve those values by prioritizing the problem areas you encounter and then fixing them. The thing, though, that really CQM pushes is it's a mindset. It's not a tool as much as it is a process and a mindset. Get yourself into a place where you check these things, you fix the problems, but you also continue to work on and maintain that these things are continuing to happen. As Andrew mentioned, configuration drift can cause a problem for you here. You go through, you rationalize everything in your network, you get everybody happy, everybody's got great quality calls, and then tomorrow somebody changes a router and forgets to put in QoS. Okay, so maintain. That is, define how you're gonna keep this CQM into a process for you and continue to utilize those tools. We've had customers who have implemented the CQM into a dashboard for their executives to keep their executives abreast of how quality is for them. One of the things they mentioned, though, was user perception drives as much of this as the raw data in your network. Okay. So there's CQM and the reports. Well, now we know that there's a problem. We've sort of looked at the data and seen there's a problem, and CQM agrees, or it's told us there's a problem. What do we have to look at to sort of look at what's causing that problem and finding the next cause for that? That's about server and client logs. Just in general, we talk about logging. There's sort of these five buckets that I put here. We have the new 2013 CLS logger tool. We have the old 2010 and OCS 2007 OCS logger tool. We have client logs. Those are your UCC API and ETL and stack trace logs that are on the client. We have Snooper, which is our tool we use to parse a lot of those logs. don't forget about Event Viewer. Event Viewer on the server and on the client can tell you a lot about what your link server and your link environment are doing. Don't forget to look there when somebody says there's a problem. I don't know how many times I've encountered something where I'm digging into log traces and then I fire up the Event Viewer and it says, yeah, I couldn't start the service because I didn't have the cert. Great. So, CLS logging. How many people are familiar with CLS logging and how it differs? Okay, a few. So CLS logging is a unified interface that we really worked on in 2013 to get you to a point where what we were finding was in large pools and large environments, trying to isolate the single server that was going to be encountering the problem or the single server where this problem was happening was difficult. And if you had 10 servers in a pool and your edge servers and your mediation servers, and you wanted to have somebody replicate a problem, you have to log into every one of them, start logging on every one of them, right? It's this big mess. So CLS logging can take care of that for us. It's a tool that'll reach out to all your front ends, all your link servers in your environment, control logging, and generate the same type of logs that OCS Logger does, but then as well give you a unified way to search through and pull back only the logs where the problem actually occurred. One thing that they did for CLS logging here was this thing called Always On. This lets you put an error level, effectively, of logging at the UCC API, the stack trace layer, always turned on in your environment. So if things start going really south in your environment and you've got Always On turned on, you're going to see it. You don't have to try and recreate it, right? So keep turn on Always On. It's helpful, leave it on, because you can also have these other scenario-based queries or scenario-based situations running. These scenarios cover everything from inbound and outbound dialing to conference attendance to dial-in conferencing to IAM in presence to, there's this wide gamut of things, and in the notes I've got a link to a little more detail about that. But there's these built-in scenarios. You can run one of these built-in scenarios at the same time as you got Always On turned on. That is a really nice thing here, but you should remember when you have that other scenario plus Always On, no other scenarios can be running in your environment. So if you've got a large distributed environment and you start playing with this and you have Always On turned on and then your administrator in Dubai decides he needs to troubleshoot something at a deeper layer, your administrator in the US can't also troubleshoot something else at a deeper layer, okay? Couple of notes here on the scenarios. XDS replication, so CMS replication, and persistent chat aren't covered in the built-in scenarios. So if you're gonna need to work on and troubleshoot and diagnose those things, yes, Maureen?
This is not either.
Right, and LYSS, the link storage database that's on the front ends that does a lot of our work for us before putting data into QoE. Oh, LIS. Okay, sorry. LIS, LYSS, sorry. So location information services as well. If you need to debug that, it's not in those built-in scenarios. Okay. You can create scenarios for yourself that track these things and do them at the deeper levels and get those started for you and make them available to all your other admins, but they aren't in the built-in scenarios. OCS Logger, there's still cases where you might want to use this. The caveat being, in those large distributed environments, it's kind of problematic to get it started at the right time. And this tool can't be running or won't start to be able to log while any Always On or any CLS logging sessions are running. So if you've got CLS Always On started, you're going to need to stop that across your entire pool sets before you can start this, okay? But there are cases where if you know the server that this is happening on, you know the server the user is logging into, there may be cases where this may simply be faster for a point in time snap of capturing some logs than trying to get the scenario set up in CLS Logger, okay? They're both useful tools. Understand the differences in the times when you can use them. client logging. Some people say they don't want to turn on client logs. I say leave them on. I say turn them on to full and set a policy to make the users always have them on set to full. Because when it happens, you don't have to get them to recreate it. You've got 150 megs worth of logs sitting there on their machine. You can come back in and get the data you need off their machine. And as long as you set it to full, you get the media log, media stack traces that PSS can interpret if the media stack is being funky on you. Okay? If you set it to light, you don't get that. Very, very minor. I've never seen this affect CPU in any real appreciable way, but it is writing something to disk, so there's going to be something, right? So if you've got extremely slow disks and things, you may see something, but I've never personally seen any problem where having this turned on caused any performance problem. So if the phone is the default audio device and is not USB tethered better together?
It is USB.
If it's USB tethered, yes, you'll still get log, you'll still get data here. If it's not USB tethered together and it's a standalone device, you won't get any data here and you'll need to get that off the phone logs itself. There is still data, even in better together, there is still data in the phone logs that won't be in here because it's not just being used as an audio device. Sadly. Okay, so, and in the notes, in the speaker notes for the session, I've got a couple of quick paste shortcuts to get you into the deeper layer where we moved the tracing folder for 2013. So they're quick little one-liners that you can put into your run prompt that'll pop you right into the folder where that exists on anybody's machine. They're variable-based. And put you in for the 2010 one as well when you're still running that. Because we put the one for 2013 inside a hidden folder five layers deeper than we did the one for 2010. So. Now we're talking about, so we've just gathered all these logs on the server or on the client. What do we do with them now? We open up Snooper. Who here hasn't seen Snooper in 2010 or 2013? Awesome. Okay. Who in here was at Nick and Scott's session earlier? Okay. So they mentioned something in their session. They said Snooper doesn't parse the XML of a VQR report. They're right. It doesn't in the 2010 version. It does in the 2013. So Snooper, it's a really powerful tool. It's got a lot of color coding. It's got a lot of different features for us. We'll jump in here in just a minute into a demo of it. One note here on the bottom, if you've still got 32-bit desktops out there and you need to do local log parsing on those desktops, Snooper isn't going to run. It's a 64-bit only binary. There's this nifty little tool, text analysis tool, that has a 32-bit runtime for it. Gives you some ability to interact with those logs that's better than Notepad. Still not as nice as Snooper. To get the version that would run for Snooper, you have to go all the way back to the OCS 2007 RTM version of Snooper if you want a 32-bit build of Snooper. Yeah, not even the R2 version was 64-bit only. Okay. So we're going to jump into a little demo here of Snooper. I'm just going to walk through a couple of the things that I find in that. So this is Snooper. So we've got the messages tab here, and I can come down here and find an invite, right? So I've now got that call sort of captured or selected. One of the nice features we added to 2013 was this call flow or ladder diagram view. So this is a single point of view from, since it's taken on my client, it's a single person's point of view or a single client's point of view of what the call sort of flow was in the ladder diagram for that call. If you've captured a couple of these, or you've captured your client logs on your client, and you've also captured SIP stack tracing on your server, you can actually merge those two sets of logs for that same call into a larger multinodal ladder diagram using Snooper here. Okay. So we can see simply, we start paging through and we can see an invite went out, we can see ringing session progress, we can see all the data coming back, we can see the acts, and we can see everything's good. We're in a call, and then we do a buy, and we get a 200 okay, because I hung up. All right? So great. We've got a ladder diagram. But again, it's my view of this call. I don't know what the server was doing when it after it received and processed this message. I don't know what her client was doing after they received and processed this message. But I do, because I know that I got stuff back from them. But I don't know what happened in the intervening steps. If I've just captured this here from that one client's perspective of this. So one thing I'm looking for here is MS diagnostics. I've had a number of customers come to me and ask, well, what MS diagnostics are bad and what MS diagnostics are good? Well, MS diagnostics that are bad usually show up in the monitoring server under our top failures reports. Those are generally the ones that I'd consider bad. The ones that I'd consider okay are things like this, 25008 is simply, I was attempting to route to the primary endpoint, but it spits me out this diagnostics code. Yeah, gave you information. Okay, you got information, good for you. Didn't mean there was a problem. So as I say, MS diagnostics are helpful, but just taking the fact that there was one as a meaning of a problem isn't the right way to attack this. Okay. Same thing with ICE warning flags. If you're looking at your call detail report and you're saying, "Hey, I've got an ICE warning flag." Okay. Good for you. You have a 0x0 ICE warning flag that says, I didn't have a problem. So, we're now going to get out of here, or get out of MS Diagnostics, and we're going to go looking for the... There's a... Sorry, I have to find the... I have to find the timestamp in my trace here. So this is my service. This is my client. At the end of this call, it packed up its VQR report in a service request and sent it back off to my server at Microsoft. One of the best things I think our Snooper team ever did was gave me the ability to do that. Right in the interface. I don't have to copy that blob out into something else to parse it. I don't have to look through the full strings of that to find for tracing. Gee, just let me do it here. So they did. When we start digging into the media line here, we can start seeing our inbound and outbound streams. We can start seeing our network. Hey, this is that same data that was going into QoE. It's the same data that was pulled there, but I've got it on my client. One of the places I've seen people most interested in this is O365, multi-tenant. You don't have access to pull those QoE reports. If you've got client logging turned on, you can still get them. You get point-in-time snapshots of them from the PC's perspective, but you're still getting that data. You can still look at what is that client thinking the jitter is on their network, even if you can't pull that data out of the QoE reports from the O365 environment. Okay. So on this call, you can see I had packet loss. 0.014, 1.4% packet loss. Is QoE going to call that call bad? Is CQM? Yes. CQM, anything over 1%, is going to call that call bad and want it to be looked at. Okay? But beyond that, I start seeing things like the delay and the burst gap. I start seeing all these different things. But I can also start looking at, oh, and quality estimates, these are where your NMOS scores come from. So that's where your NMOS and the degradation comes from. Okay? Say what? Most definitely. Yep. I was looking at the media line rather than the other data. If I look at capture device and render device. So yeah, I'll get that. The little bit of a wrinkle here, and it's something that CQM is working on as well, is depending on which USB port I've got my headset plugged into, I may get a dash 2 at the end of this. Okay, it's a little challenging to then correlate all the Plantronics BT300Ms and the BT300Ms-2s and the BT300Ms-3s, because they're all the same audio device, but... Yeah. Makes this a little challenging. I don't know how to fix that quite yet. All the information in here, and you can start seeing things like the reflexive address. You can start seeing the fact that this was a call made where things bounced off the edge. One of the people in this environment was outside. Okay. So this is all that data. And again, it's right there in your client in the UCC API logs, as long as they didn't do something silly like turn their PC off before they ended the call. Ending your call by closing your laptop lid isn't the best idea. The server thinks something went wrong, right? The server thinks you dropped offline. It doesn't think you hung up. So that's Snooper. Anything anybody else wants me to look at or show off here in Snooper? Okay. So, if by chance you don't have the 2013 version of Snooper and you need to parse that XML blob, here's a nifty little tool for you, XML Notepad. It's a little better than dropping that XML. Actually, it's a lot better than dropping that XML into a text file and opening it with IE. It can start giving you some really good information and being able to dig into that VQ report. If you don't have the 2013 version of Snooper for some reason. And when that usually happens, Snooper is dependent on the C++ redistributables that come with the server. So if you don't have the 2013 version of the server, you don't have the right C++ build, so the logging and debugging tools won't install. So that's why you might still have the 2010 version of Snooper if you've still got a big 2010 environment. This tool, yeah.
Do you see Snooper crashing a lot with the newer builds? I've seen that happen a lot on a bunch of my customer servers, and I don't know if it's the TMX file or if it's something else.
What? Ping me offline and let's talk about what version you've got and what, okay. Where it comes from. Okay. Because the Snooper team that's working on this is doing a lot of work on it. The RTM version of the debugging tools was buggy. Debugging tools being buggy is always fun. But Snooper crashed. I had any number of places where I could reproduce a crash with that thing at will. Opening a log in a certain way would cause it to crash. But yeah, different from that. Ping me, Tracy, we'll talk. So XML Notepad, It's a nice little tool, very simple, gives you a nice, that very similar plus minus tree view into these VQ reports if you don't have the 2013 version of Snooper to do it right in the UI. There's actually a link in the, I think on this deck, I wrote an article for Nextop on how to do this. It walks you through the process of, in 2010 Snooper, finding that VQ report, what you have to copy out from where to where, what to put in, and it walks you through using XML Notepad to do this analysis. Okay, so Snooper and QoE just told me I've got packet loss. How do I figure out where that packet loss lives? How do I figure out what to do about that packet loss? Now we're getting into network capture. So we've just said we have packet loss. That was our end result of this investigation as to why these calls were bad. What do we do for it? Packet capture. So right now Microsoft has two tools for this. We have the one that you may all know and love, Network Monitor 3.4 with its link parsers. We have a newer tool that's the replacement to Network Monitor. It's called Microsoft Message Analyzer. It natively understands, without any additional parsers or anything, SIP, SDP, TURN, right? RTP, RTCP, natively. Okay. So when you pull the deck down, there's some hidden slides in here where I show off Microsoft Message Analyzer. In this session, I'm going to more talk about Network Monitor 3.4 because it's what people are a little more familiar with and being out there. Okay. Remember, you have to get the link parsers for Network Monitor, and to use those link parsers, you have to get the right version of the overall parsers for Network Monitor. I've got links in the deck for where to get those versions and where to get those builds so that Network Monitor can parse link. Oh, sorry. Wireshark. Network people generally know Wireshark. I got no problem with Wireshark. I just don't tend to use it. Remember, though, the capture files that Wireshark generates, Network Monitor can open, and the capture files that Network Monitor generates, Wireshark can open. So if you're a link admin and you'd rather have the Microsoft stack on your link servers, end to end, do it. Let your network guy use Wireshark on the network because that's what he's familiar with. And you can have the Microsoft stack on yours so you don't have to figure out, is there a problem with WinPCAP binding to my NIC? And who's going to troubleshoot that? Okay. So use whichever one you're most comfortable with. They're both out there. So how many people are familiar with the Link Networking and Troubleshooting Guide? Okay. So those of you who aren't, go get it. It's a well-written document, very large, lots more detail than I go into. But one of our support engineers did an analysis and worked with one of his customers and came up with this overall general set of steps for how to troubleshoot packet loss using the tools available. That overall set of steps is really capturing simultaneous network traces between both endpoints and the server. So if you've got a PC to PC call, you probably want to get logging turned on both PCs at the same time. You probably want to get your Snooper or your UCC API logs at the same time. You want to be able to really correlate these things together, and the way to correlate them is do them all at the same time. Okay? Then you filter your network capture by your RTP or RTCP ports. So that is going in and figuring out where your media was happening based on your Snooper. So your UCC API logs tell you what port you were using, so filter out your network capture that you've just done to only deal with traffic that's between those two ports. Show you how to do that. You identify your RTCP sender and receiver report blocks. So in the control blocks of RTCP, we're delivering that data on an interim basis during the call of what packet loss looks like at that point in time during that call, right? Doing that continually across that, or not continually, but repeatedly across the duration of that call. Then you want to end up, you'll end up verifying the sequence numbers end to end to determine the network loss, or meaning that sequence not arriving. So I've got a sequence being sent by one side. I don't see the sequence on the other side. I know there was packet loss. And then you end up looking at the RTP payloads right before that to determine what the cause was. So we'll get into that just a little more here. This is a little scenario that he ran through, which was he had a client making calls outbound through mediation to a gateway to the PSTN. And this was how he went about troubleshooting that. So it was RTP, he was capturing his UCC API logs and getting RTP control here. He was looking at what it was here. Well, there's my hotspot. Hotspot between mediation and gateway. I don't like that. I don't like 5% on my managed network in my data center. Right? This might be something I should look at. But this is that thing where he captured and looked at the RTP channels, RTCP channels, at all of these legs to be able to find the right place to then dig further into with his network admin. This isn't simply about capturing a network trace while I'm making a call and saying, hey, I've got packet loss at some point along the leg. No, it's do as much work as you can to help your network admin and to work with your network admin and make this a collaborative process to say, not only do I know I have packet loss in my monitoring server report, it's telling me I have packet loss, but I've also done some work with you on the servers that I know of and I control to say, I have packet loss in a place I shouldn't. Network monitor.
Is there something?
Yeah.
Little last line. Is there some other location where we can get that call leg information apart from secure?
So that call leg information is in the RTP stream. So if you're doing a network capture, if I did a network capture on my mediation server here for this interface, and I look at the streams between mediation and gateway, that's going to have one RTCP stream. I have one RTCP stream between caller and mediation, right? Mediation is a back-to-back user agent. It's taking streams in, back-to-back, taking them out the other way. So it's got RTCP on both legs. So in this scenario, a network capture on this one device could tell me both of those different pieces of information, and the RTCP in each of those would tell me that uniquely across those two pieces. Okay? But yeah, CQM will also do that because it breaks those into the legs of this was, they do it based on the sort of effectively the user agent of a mediation server is different than the user agent of a call type of a mediation call is different than a call type of a P2P call. So they break those down by the caller and callee UA types to know when you're a client making a call to another client versus a mediation server making a call to a gateway or a conferencing attendant doing something. And there still may be times when you need to do it, sadly, right? If your network admin doesn't trust your application, he may want you to prove it. Okay. And this isn't about getting adversarial with our network admins and them telling us our application sucks and us telling them their network sucks, right? I know it happens. But this should be us working together to say our calls suck for our users. Let's fix that together. Okay. So, network monitor. So that was Snooper. Here's Netmon. So first, excuse me, first and foremost in Netmon, I mentioned those link parsers. When you just install them, they aren't going to be there for you. They aren't going to be set as the default for every capture you get. So you need to go into the options and go over to the parser profiles and set that link parsers that you've got as the active profile that you're using for the capture you're dealing with. Doing this does things like turning UDP streams into RTP streams. Right? So you don't sort of think, hey, I'm looking at UDP. You think, hey, I'm looking at RTP over UDP. Okay, so that's part of what this work does for us. Going back to Microsoft Message Analyzer, one of the really nice things about that natively understanding SIP and SDP and RTP and RTCP is you don't have to do this work. It natively understands that though there's a UDP packet full of media traversing my network, it is actually an RTP packet with media. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to look for here is the address of my edge server. I was capturing this on my client. I still see stun requests. This is really useful when you're troubleshooting network problems and you've got a user on the outside and they aren't getting any media. Some network captures can show you, beyond just the UCC API logs saying they don't have any MRAS credentials, or if they have MRAS credentials, are those credentials working against the edge server you're dealing with? But that's more about a call failing than it is about call quality. But it's amazing what you can get out of this network capture simply by looking at the traffic and looking at the right pieces of it. Filtering down a little farther inside of those, or rather, in communication with my edge, further on after stun, I see media. It says it's RTP, it's SRTP. So even though I captured it on the line, it's SRTP. It's encrypted. If you were to pull this out and somehow reassemble it, it's going to sound like static. Okay. Same thing happens in Wireshark. Wireshark has all that telephony analysis stuff. Doesn't work on link traffic. I mean, it works. It can find it, and it plays like static. Okay. Don't turn it off. Don't turn that encryption stuff off on the secure media, unless you have to, like you're working with a gateway that doesn't understand SRTP. It's interesting what you can hear when you record that network traffic. Okay, so I'm going to go here and I'm going to actually dig into Tern just a little because I want to show you the types of data that come out of this. So these are turn message types of allocate and allocate errors. So this is the turn server, or my edge server. I asked it to, hey, allocate some stuff for me, and it said no. Not really a problem, per se, but I asked it to do some work, and it said no in these cases of these specific things I was asking it to allocate. Doesn't necessarily indicate that there was a problem in the server. It just means that the way I was asking it or what I was asking it to do, it decided it didn't want to do for me. Okay? Whereas if I change this and look for ...103s, I can see it said, yes, I will do that work for you. I will give you that port and that information on my to do that work for you and to allocate those turn IP addresses on it. Okay. But then you ask, okay, well, what did it allocate? not enough equals. This is it actually allocating stuff for me. And I can start seeing things in here about it, what it was allocating. What the remote addresses are that I'm indicating with and what remote addresses that I'm going to be communicating with. This is all that stuff in the final SDP when you negotiate that media. This is the network's view of what that looks like while it's happening. Okay? So if you're tracing on a client, an ICE, you know, an outside client trying to negotiate media, and you start looking at all the different places it connects, it's going to try to connect to every single candidate the other guy said it should try. Every single one, at least once, if not twice, or three times. Yes? So when you say your network is encrypted, define that.
Our link traffic is encrypted.
Sure, it is. And this, so this data, I didn't use the private key to do any of this. So whether it's Link or whether it's Wireshark or whether it's anybody else, if you're capturing secure traffic, you're going to need the private key to decrypt it, right? That's the whole point of private keys. We don't want anybody else to decrypt it. Yeah, Mark?
That's so IPsec versus
yes.
Network traffic being secure. So when yeah. you're doing IPsec in your network, you need the private key to decrypt.
Yeah. Yeah. With Link, as in on a Link server, if I capture this stuff on a Link server, it won't be encrypted by the time I capture it here.
Okay, so but is that the case with your tool? How about the Wireshark tool?
Same thing. If you're capturing on the server, you shouldn't need this to decrypt it. You may need it to get to some of these secure things. So yes, so for instance, as an example, the SRTP, the secure media, you need the server's private key in your Wireshark or in your network monitor to be able to parse and capture that data. The only thing that gets that data after it's been encrypted or decrypted is your SIP stack logs, your Link OCS logger logs are after the encryption and decryption have happened. But all the stuff that's on the network layer that I'm capturing with my network tools is going to be encrypted. So we can follow up, ping me after this, we'll talk about what the different options you have. I agree everything on your wire is encrypted, that's a good thing, okay? But it should be the case that we don't necessarily need to turn that off to troubleshoot this stuff. All right? By capturing and getting the data we can capture on the line, even if it is encrypted, we can still see some of these RTP and RTCP things going on your network. Okay? So, that was one. Now I'm going to walk through this sort of scenario that we were talking about, which is I had a problem in a call, and I captured the network and I captured my UCC API logs at the same time. How did those give me an ability to find the right stream in that massive set of stuff that I captured on the line? Because when I was capturing on the line, I just turned it on. I didn't set any capture filters, I didn't know what was going to be going, I didn't know what application was going to be doing the work. Okay. So now I've got a UCC API log and a network monitor that happen at the same time, and I'm going to correlate these things together. So first, in Snooper, I want to look for my candidates, because I want to find the server and port to which I was talking, okay? Because I've got a server that I'm talking to here and a port to which I'm talking to it on. And then if I look at the other piece of this, when it comes back, I will have the other piece of that, okay? And here's the two, here's my two places that I'll be talking, one talking and one receiving. Right? So I'll be sending data here to 32.8.10, and I'll be receiving data on my client from here on 36.9.07. Right? So now I go over here, and I start looking, and I go, hey, wait a minute. There it is. Okay? So I've just found link and its process in my network stack trace having the same communication that my snooper log says I was doing. Great. Now I've brought these things together. So now when I go to my network admin, he knows that I was doing the right thing. Right? That's what he's going to believe, right? Okay. Only if you put in a Wireshark, right? So what you'll see here is if I look at the IP conversation, the IP conversation is both the IP conversations and the two UDP conversations underneath it. If I start looking at the UDP conversations, they're directional. Okay? But to filter this out, I can either simply select on this one, and that gets me the TCP conversation and then both UDP conversations underneath it. Or if I want to filter that out and get a select set of logs in here, I can actually filter on conversation.ipv4 .id equal to 244. Right? So that'll filter that out. But now I've actually ignored the UDP by filtering that way. Okay? So I actually need to add into a conversation .udp.id equal to 253 or 245 or conversation.udp.id equals to 253. Okay? You're right. No, I missed. No, I missed two equals two. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So there's that same piece of data, but I've actually searched for it in my display filter. All right? So there were ways that I could have done that, but now I've looked at it here, and I'm not in that view. If for some reason I thought, hey, maybe another application was doing stuff on that same port for some reason. Maybe I found a port that I have some business line of business application that thinks it was trying to use but wasn't fired up at the time. Okay? As we look through here, though, we start seeing that this was my link client on 192.168.1.91 talking to the edge server at 131.107.174.157. And we again see that the ports in use, 32.8.10 matches 32.8.10, right? And I was talking to 50014 and 50015. 50014 and 50015. Okay. What we now need to do is actually figure out inside of that UDP stream of data, are we starting to miss data? Are we starting to lose data? This is a little myopic view in my test here, in that I've only got a client capture of this. If I was really trying to do this, I'd have multiple sets of logs of these, and I could make sure that everything that was being sent by the one client was being processed by the server, was being processed by the next server in the line, and being received by this client. This log is a little demonstration here to show what this looks like, though. So all I'm going to be looking at here is the, I want to find the piece of data I'm looking for here. It's actually going to be missing streams in here. So again, I was trying to create a problem to show you guys a problem. This is Newt, if you've never seen Newt. Newt is the network emulation toolkit. It can generate problems on a network from that client's perspective. So if we were to dig into the reason this call had 1% packet loss, it's because I told the network driver to drop every 10th packet. It's 10% packet loss. Newt, the network emulation toolkit. Okay. So, but in this sort of view of that, you can start to, as you're looking through these media streams, give me a second to find it. I had trouble finding it yesterday, too. I apologize. Here was another binding request. So, anyhow, in here, as we're looking, what we're really trying to do is correlate. We can see that data coming out of the one endpoint, or as we're looking at it on a mediation server, we could see that data coming back from the gateway, back to us, and the mediation server sending it on, and then the client receiving that data, and we simply try to bring those two things together to get that one holistic view of are we losing packets? Do we see packets that are sent in one place and not received in the other? Do we see packets that are again sent? Are we, have we encountered FAC and we're starting to see these packets sent twice? Or are we doing TCP and TCP is giving us retransmits? All right? That's part of the reasons that TCP media isn't so preferred. Okay. So that's network monitor and a little bit of how you can look at that data and what data is available to you. Even in a secure, this was all on a RTCP and RTP were on this network, right? I can still see these media streams as happening. The content of them is protected. As long as you're not trying to play back, this will give you every piece of information about what was going on. And when you look at this with one of the advantages that Message Analyzer has is when you fire up Message Analyzer, because it understands RTP and RTCP, RTP and RTCP natively, it can actually just show you and highlight out those control channels where it's reporting packet loss. Hey, look, there's an RTCP channel that says there was packet loss on the network right there on the stream, simply because it understands those things natively. Okay? So, if there aren't any more major questions about this, that's it. That's how you look into, and we'll get there. That is how you, what tools you have, and how you can sort of progress through and look at this and get down to the network layer and have that productive, useful conversation with your network admin, rather than simply throwing something out at him and saying, "You suck," right? Because we all know how well that comes back. Okay, so at the end of the deck as well, I've got a bunch of different references and blog articles here to try and get you up to speed on these tools, because I gave you a little bit of information on it, okay? These are all in the deck, as you can grab it from the MyLink portal. There's a set of TechNet documents that describe some of this. There is a link there to the networking and troubleshooting guide. That networking troubleshooting guide, Appendix D in that networking troubleshooting guide is a much deeper level diagnosis into troubleshooting packet loss. Okay? It is really detailed. Yes?
Link server logging tool, did you mention, or is it now called Snooper?
Link Server Logging Tools, OCS Logger. So that, please submit your evals if you haven't, or when you have a chance. They're helpful. I'd like to hear how well you think I did. Not quite done, but thank you. So I've got this top one here. It's a list of phone numbers and SIP URIs that will answer calls if you want to place some test calls and not annoy your users. So that top link there, actually ULaw, the people who wrote the codec ULaw, they have a phone number listed here that you can call and record a message and have it played back, and you can call and have them play you hold music so you can hear how it sounds on your call and on your network. They'll answer that call. If you're a pure SIP client, you could make a SIP to SIP call. A Link SIP client really can't because you're not federated with them, but you can dial the phone number they have and do the same thing. There's a bunch of different phone numbers listed there for you to be able to place those test calls and see what calls look like on your network. And they can be really high quality, unlike calling the time and information number, which may not be so high quality. Okay? In the end of this, I have a little reference here for how to use Wireshark to do some of these things and some of the little things you have to do in Wireshark here. One of the pieces that I find most interesting is out of the box, Wireshark just puts this thing as UDP. You have to actually tell it it's RTP. We do it natively. You have to futz with it for them to do it. Now that you've got it as RTP, you can actually show your streams here and get these RTP streams. You can then pull over and do bandwidth analysis and things like that on them, and you can hit that player link there, right? Yeah, you can. It plays. It's really fun to listen to. If you ever get people who wonder, is Link secure on the line? Do this and play them the audio. So thank you so much.